All right, in this video, I want to engage in a little exercise in pattern recognition. Specifically, we're going to look at the patterns between Kenneth Feinberg and Benjamin Crump. And in doing so, we'll be able to draw certain corollaries and parallels that will help even the most skeptic among us see some of what might be going on behind the scenes as it relates to things that are presented to us in the news as real. For those of you who don't know, Kenneth Feinberg is an attorney. Specifically, he is a mediator. His practice focuses on mediation. And as a result of this practice, he is as it is told to us, an expert in dispute resolution. So when there is a civil aspect to big time cases, his name tends to pop up as it relates to the distribution of funds to victims or any other thing that can be loosely put into the mediation category in the terms that the law uses to define these things. So here's a CNN article. Kenneth Feinberg has handled settlements with 9/11 victims and the BP oil disaster. Over the past 4 decades, when there has been a case that needed a top-notch legal mediator, one attorney has been called many times, Kenneth Feinberg. He'll be most remembered as the first special master of the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund, which as of November had distributed more than $6 billion for 32,000 award decisions. You'll remember the Victims Compensation Fund being in the news just in the past couple years when they made this whole circus out of Jon Stewart going it to Congress and pleading the case for why that there should be an extension of the fund because it had run out, and there's all of these problems emerging among those who were on the scene as it relates to them developing illnesses that take a long time to develop. And the fund was experiencing the problem of not having enough money to pay out the increasing amount of claims, but they ended up extending it, of course, and that's a whole nother issue that I don't really want to get into. The point is that Kenneth Feinberg was the lawyer appointed as the first special master of the Victim Compensation Fund for September 11th, which we know was a staged criminal enterprise planned many, many decades in advance. So the fact that this was the guy that they chose to handle the lawsuits from the victims and handle all of the money that was being distributed to those victims is very important. This is someone we need to pay attention to and research further. And obviously, if it was just that he was a mediator appointed to the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund, that might be just a random thing that didn't deserve further scrutiny. However, when you dive just a little deeper into this next paragraph here, Feinberg has also made compensation decisions for victims of Agent Orange, Jerry Sandusky, the Virginia Tech and Sandy Hook massacres, and the BP Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. So now we have to take a step back from all this and say, whoa, hold on a second. You're telling me that the same guy who was in charge of the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund is also the one who is determining the distribution of victim compensation for Agent Orange, Jerry Sandusky, the Virginia Tech Sandy Hook massacres, and the BP Horizon oil spill? All of which are events that could potentially involve cover-ups from clandestine organization involvement. So it would make sense in that context that you would have the same person who is a part of the network that could be trusted to not let any information out that was not supposed to get out as a part of these arbitration proceedings. This is a massive red flag, which requires further research. So let's look into Kenneth Feinberg and his family and see what turns up. When you go to his Wikipedia page, we see, first of all, that I just wanted to point this out. He worked for 5 years as an administrative assistant and chief of staff for U.S. Senator Ted Kennedy. This is an important thing to note, just tangentially, before going further, that there is a certain idea out there among people that look into this sort of material and promote it that the Kennedys are somehow immune from it. And this goes back to the assassination or alleged assassination of John F. Kennedy in the 1960s. So it is assumed that as the president who was assassinated, he must have been doing something that went against the agenda in some way, and that's what required him being killed. And of course, the very term itself, conspiracy theorist, was crafted by the CIA and other organizations like the CIA in the aftermath of that assassination to create a term that could cast doubt on those who are questioning the official narrative. And we see this trend continuing until present day, where that term carries a certain stigma with it that the media tries to use to discredit anyone who is questioning things that it says. I just wanted to point this out because there's also another Kennedy that is in the news and he's supposedly on your side as it relates to vaccinations, but you have to look at the staff of these Kennedys and you have to see their interrelations and see how they're a part of the system in so many ways, and that flies in the face of the narrative that they're somehow against it. And you'll see why I'm saying this now as we go. Due to the fact that someone as influential to the scheme as Kenneth Feinberg was his chief of staff, Ted Kennedy's, that is. And I'm not saying this is a black or white issue as it relates to the Kennedys, because there are a lot of suspicious deaths that have occurred in that family. But if you research the original Kennedy clan and how they came into power, well, it starts to make a little more sense. I'm just saying it's not as cut and dry as, oh, they're against the system. They have way too many ties with it for that to be the case. So anyway, Kenneth Feinberg is, as the official narrative would go, he's just the best mediator in the country. And so he's the natural choice for someone to come in and mediate the distribution of these funds in these high profile, high pressure situations. You know, that's the story that they would craft for that sort of situation. Oh, and incidentally, Feinberg was also one of the three arbitrators who determined the fair market value of the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination. Speaking of that assassination, so look at the conflict of interest here. This guy was on Ted Kennedy's staff. He was his chief of staff. And yet he's the one who is a part of the crew that determined and controlled information about the Zapruder film. And additionally, he was one of two arbitrators who determined the allocation of legal fees in the Holocaust slave labor litigation. And speaking of which, Feinberg was the chairman of the board of directors for the John F. Kennedy Library Foundation. And when you look into Feinberg a little deeper, you can see here's a picture of him with Carolyn Kennedy, who is the last surviving daughter of John F. Kennedy. So what's Kenneth Feinberg doing with this relationship with the Kennedys? And this is his wife, And now we'll get into her. Diane Feinberg. This is from the Jewish Agency for Israel. Diane Feinberg is current vice chair of UIA and immediate past chair of the executive committee of JFNA. She serves on the board of directors of the United Israel Appeal. Prior to that, she served as vice chair of the UIA and president of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. She is on the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington's board of directors and is a trustee of the United Jewish Endowment Fund, where she most recently served as chair of its grants committee. Ms. Feinberg has been a member of the Jewish Agency's board of governors since 2000, where she previously served as deputy chair of its marketing and communications and of the assembly planning committee. So, Kenneth Feinberg's wife, the man who is the arbitrator for so many of these high-profile events as it relates to the civil proceedings and the victim compensation funds. His wife is heavily involved in the Jewish Agency for Israel. So let's look into what is the Jewish Agency for Israel. The Jewish Agency played a central role in the founding and development of the State of Israel. David Ben-Gurion served as the chairman of its executive committee from 1935, and in this capacity, on May 14, 1948, he proclaimed independence for the State of Israel. So, David Ben-Gurion is the chairman of the executive committee of the Jewish Agency for Israel, and he became Israel's first prime minister. In the years before and after the founding of the state, the Jewish Agency oversaw the establishment of about 1,000 towns and villages in Mandate Palestine. Just the language there is hilarious. It serves as the main link between Israel and Jewish communities around the world. This is from the Jewish Virtual Library. Israel Intelligence and Security, the Mossad. The need for an intelligence agency. When the State of Israel was declared, David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, decided it was necessary to create intelligence agencies to operate on behalf of the nascent state. On June 7, 1948, he held his first meeting on this matter with intelligence officials. In other words, the first prime minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, created the Mossad, or what would become the Mossad, and he was heavily involved in the Jewish Agency, which Kenneth Feinberg's wife is a member of the Board of Governors. So it's a loose connection or a loose claim, but it can nevertheless be stated that Diane Feinberg has ties to what would become the Mossad, because all of these players in the Jewish Agency eventually were very much involved in the creation of Israel, and its first prime minister was involved in the organization who set the wheels in motion for the Mossad to be created. And the key to this connection is that the Jewish Agency was an openly Zionist organization. They were a part of the World Zionist Network, and they were actively campaigning as Zionists for the creation of the State of Israel. So let's put it under the file of coincidence that Kenneth Feinberg's wife has ties to this Zionist organization, and he is the one who is serving as the arbitrator for the 9/11 Victims Compensation Fund, which is important because we know that 9/11, as I said, was a staged criminal enterprise. Meaning, the players that are involved are a part of a criminal enterprise and are most likely criminals themselves. Now, of course, innocent until proven guilty, but the connections are concerning at this stage. So going back to the Mossad, I found this a bit amusing when I was looking. This is from, again, the Jewish Virtual Library. So it's a Mossad-friendly source, and when it's describing its operations, I just want to read these real quick. The agency uses both human intelligence and signals intelligence. Some of the Mossad's operations include pursuing Nazi war criminals, culminating in the capture of Adolf Eichmann and bringing him to justice in Israel, locating and returning Yoel Schumacher to his family after the boy was kidnapped and smuggled out of Israel by his grandfather, bringing home the Ethiopian Jews, pursuing and killing members of Black September responsible for the murder of Israeli athletes at the 1972 Munich Olympics. Now, this is the one that I was laughing out loud when I saw, bringing home the Ethiopian Jews. You know, they put this in their own library as if it is a clear example of their magnanimous, virtuous activities on behalf of the state of Israel. I'm sorry. But when you look into this a little further, Israel admits Ethiopian women were given birth control shots. A government official has for the first time acknowledged the practice of injecting women of Ethiopian origin with the long-acting contraceptive Depo-Provera. Health Ministry Director General Professor Roni Gamzu has instructed the four health maintenance organizations to stop the practice as a matter of course. Gamzu's letter came in response to a letter from Sharona Eliu Chai of the Association of Civil Rights in Israel, representing several women's rights and Ethiopian immigrants groups. The letter demanded the injection cease immediately and that an investigation be launched into the practice. About 6 weeks ago, on an educational television program, journalist Gal Gabay revealed the results of interviews with 35 Ethiopian immigrants. The women's testimony could help explain the almost 50% decline over the past 10 years in the birth rate of Israel's Ethiopian community. So you see here, on the one hand, the Mossad is claiming credit for bringing home the Ethiopian Jews, and then at the same time, what they were really doing is giving them injections without their understanding what they were, that was sterilizing them. And so they were knowingly sterilizing the Ethiopian Jewish community that was coming back to Israel. They told us they are inoculations, said one of the women interviewed. They told us people who frequently give birth suffer. We took it every 3 months. We said we didn't want to. But obviously, this was made a part of their repatriation to Israel, and it wasn't explicitly stated to them that this is what it was going to do. So I just found that very amusing that this was on their official Jewish Virtual Library site. Describing the activities of the Mossad, and then here it is out in the open. Oh, Israel admits Ethiopian women were given birth control shots without their knowledge. Just, you can't make this stuff up, you know? This is what I was referring to just a second ago. Jewish Agency, in full view, Jewish Agency of Israel. International body representing the World Zionist Organization. So, this is literally the international body that represents the Zionist cause. And again, Ken Feinberg's wife is a member of the board of directors of this organization. And Ken Feinberg has a lot of ties to the Kennedys, as well as all of these events that have taken place allegedly, as reported by the news organizations across the world and America. Events that have a lot of suspicious activity surrounding them. Jerry Sandusky, this is the issue of pedophilia in the mainstream news. Agent Orange, this is the activities of Monsanto and all of the horrific things that it has created and pushed onto the world. These are the school shootings that allegedly take place. This oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico that was supposedly organic in nature, that was right on the heels of the supposedly organic in nature Hurricane Katrina and the levees bursting and the Army Corps of Engineers that were involved in that. And the whole thing is very interesting now, isn't it? But moving further into the 9/11 aspect of this, as it relates to the legal proceedings, because this is what Kenneth Feinberg was a part of, well, we have here an article about Alvin K. Hellerstein. This is the judge who handles all 9/11 tort litigation. So tort litigation, for those of you who don't know, is just civil suit litigation that takes place in civil court. So it's not a criminal proceeding, but this is what a class action lawsuit would be categorized under. So all of the families and the victims, again, alleged victims, who sued in court were a part of the class action in the 9/11 litigations in New York. And it just so happens that Alvin K. Hellerstein was the judge who was appointed to oversee these cases. And so he was kind of working with the arbitrator, Kenneth Feinberg, as it related to handling these victim compensation cases and... here we have a little more information about him. Alvin K. Hellerstein's son is an Israeli lawyer who emigrated to Israel in 2001 and whose law firm works for and with the Rothschild-funded Mossad company responsible for the 9/11 terror attacks. Now, this is a bold statement. This is an affirmative statement. We can't say that with certainty, at least if you're being a responsible researcher at this point, but... as we'll see, it is true that it was a company, ICTS, that had ties to the Rothschilds and individuals who had ties, like Dianne Feinberg, to Mossad organizations that were in control of the security of the airports and the World Trade Center on 9/11. So this is obviously a thread that deserves looking into further. But the main point here is that Judge Hellerstein's son worked for the law firm that represented ICTS, the company that was in charge of security in the airports on 9/11, that supposedly allowed these hijackers onto the planes. And that's obviously a contentious issue amongst 9/11 researchers about whether or not there were actual hijackers, right? I'm sure they had patsies of some sort on some level involved in this to create that paper trail. But whether or not they actually got on the planes and whether or not the planes actually did what they say they did, or, you know, that whole thing is filled with ambiguity, and I don't really want to get into that issue in this context. But you see, the point is that regardless of what it actually was, what the details were, this company was immune from discovery, and thus information on the day of 9/11 was protected by these lawsuits, because this gets back to Kenneth Feinberg. As the sole person responsible for distributing the money from the victims' compensation fund, Feinberg paid out nearly $7 billion to families in compensation if they would sign the agreement not to sue the airlines or the Israeli airport security firm involved in 9/11, which was ICTS, who owned Huntley USA, and Huntley USA was the company that was operating in the American airports. More than 98% of the families accepted the money from the Feinberg-managed fund. So this is a huge piece of information here that the families, now you can see how it would play on multiple levels. Maybe these families were a part of it. And in this way, the families, 98% of them anyway, they are funneled a golden parachute through this victim compensation fund, and they sign the waiver that doesn't let any of this discovery process take place in court, which hides all of the information about 9/11 and protects it. This is the cover-up, right? Or, alternatively, these are actually all victims of the attacks, and they lost family members, and they just decided that it wasn't worth going through the process, and they took the money. At least 98% of them anyway. So then there's the 2%, and the 2% in both cases could be actual real victims who are just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they are suing to find out what actually happened in civil court. But as a part of all of these proceedings, they're getting pressure to take a lot of money when it was originally happening right after 9/11. And then if not, they're pursuing a case in civil court with a judge who we will see has the same ties that Kenneth Feinberg does to all of the same organizations. So it's not really a favorable environment to engage in this pursuit. His son, Joseph Z. Hellerstein, lives on a Jewish settlement on the West Bank and practices law with one of Israel's most important law firms, Amit, Polek, and Madelon. Which, again, is the law firm that represented ICTS, the parent organization of Huntley USA, the company that was in charge of security on 9/11 in the airports. Oh, and then there's this little detail about Michael Chertoff, who, of course, became the head of the Department of Homeland Security in the aftermath of the Patriot Act, which he was heavily involved in the writing of. And he just so happened to be involved in the FBI's investigation at the time due to his role. And he was overseeing the removal of all the steel evidence from the World Trade Center that was shipped to other countries. And he had ties to the company that manufactured the scanners that were then placed into the airport after the TSA was established. Another coincidence here. But as you see here, Chertoff is an Israeli national whose mother was one of the first agents of the Mossad. So again, we have the same ties here. Just really interesting stuff as it relates to the legal aspect of the 9/11 cover-up. Going further, that morning, there were other striking anomalies. The crash of AA-11 into the North Tower at 8:46 a.m. should also have raised red flags. And yeah, many people have covered this, that the George Floyd video was 8 minutes and 46 seconds long. And we'll get into that when we get to Benjamin Crum. Should have also raised red flags because the point of impact at the 95th and 96th floors was too remarkable to be happenstance. Both floors were occupied by Marsh & McLennan, one of the world's largest insurance brokerages, with family ties to the private intelligence firm Kroll Associates, which held the security contract at the World Trade Center. Indeed, the network of corporate ties is so entangled that were I to trace all of the links, they would easily fill a book. The CEO of Marsh & McLennan on 9/11 was Jeffrey Greenberg, son of Maurice Hank Greenberg, owner of AIG, the world's largest insurance conglomerate, second largest depending on the source. Greenberg's other son, Evan, was CEO of Ace Limited, another large insurance company. Maurice Greenberg had been a director of the New York Federal Reserve Bank for many years, and in 1994-95 served as its chairman. Greenberg was also vice chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, which in 1996 published his report, Making Intelligence Smarter, The Future of U.S. Intelligence. As a result of which, Senator Arlen Specter floated Greenberg's name as a candidate for the directorship of the CIA. In 1993, Greenberg's huge insurance conglomerate AIG reportedly bankrolled the Wall Street spy firm Kroll Associates, saving it from bankruptcy. Thereafter, Kroll became an AIG subsidiary. After the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, Kroll acquired the contract from the Port Authority of New York to upgrade security at the World Trade Center, in the process beating out two other firms. Kroll continued with the World Trade Center security contract through the period leading up to the September 11th attacks. One of Kroll's directors, Jerome Hauer, also managed New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's Office of Emergency Management, which was located on the 23rd floor of World Trade Center 7. Notice this means Kroll had unfettered access to all three of the buildings destroyed on 9/11. This startling coincidence should have been reason for enough for the 9/11 Commission to investigate Kroll's shady background, as well as its relations with AIG, Ace, and Marsh and McLennan. Unfortunately, the official investigators were not interested in connecting the dots. Go figure, right? And incidentally, Kroll was started by Jules Kroll. And he has a son, Nick Kroll, who's now an actor and creating foul cartoons for Netflix, among other things. And incidentally, also, AIG just so happened to be at the heart of the credit default swap scam and the collateralized debt obligation scam that precipitated the housing bubble bursting in 2008. And AIG was one of the too big to fail organizations that was bailed out to the tune of $150 billion by the US taxpayers. Now, if you believe the official sources, they have since paid back that money and their operating system was cut in half. They had to sell off their Asia division and all of this stuff that is supposedly bad for this company took place. However, you have to understand if it was a front for creating certain things to happen, it doesn't matter what happens to it afterwards. And just the fact that it still exists is quite amazing given its role in all of that and how much money it lost. But again, that was the point of the bailouts. Again, the CEO of Marsh and McLennan, who bought Marsh and McLennan bought Kroll Associates on 9/11, was Jeffrey Greenberg, the son of Maurice Greenberg, owner of AIG. So Kroll Associates was a subsidiary of Marsh McLennan, and they have offices in the World Trade Center, and they were responsible for the security of the World Trade Center. And it just so happened that the two planes allegedly is specifically American Airlines 11 crashed into the 95th and 96th floors, which were Marsh and McLennan floors. I mean, this stuff is just crazy, right? So now we're getting to the point of it being outside the realm of coincidence. When I started, you might have read a headline like this and thought, where am I going? Well, now you see where I'm going with all of this. There are way too many coincidences going on here. And you see how, along with the Gelatin Bee Art Group and the Urban Moving Systems Front that was on the scene, a front for the Mossad, I mean, this is admitted, it was a Mossad front, on the scene of 9/11, the morning of, you know. All of these things tie together in a way that just paints the picture of an obvious street muscle team that was involved in coordinating the nuts and bolts of the operation on the ground floor. I can't remember who exactly it was, but I want to say that it was Jules Kroll who actually flew to New York on the morning of 9/11 to meet, or the night before the morning of 9/11 to meet with Rudy Giuliani. That happened. I can't remember who it was. Oh, this is about a Kroll associate getting kicked out of France due to their suspicions of it being espionage. Oh, here we go. Kroll AIG made no effort to conceal the fact that between 97 and 2003, the AIG board of directors included Frank Wisner, Junior, son of one of the founders of the CIA. There you go, right? The French were surely aware of Kroll's long-standing practice of hiring former CIA, FBI, and British intelligence agents. There you go. This is the organization in charge of World Trade Center security on 9/11. Let me see if I can find who exactly went to visit Giuliani. If I can't find it right now... I will write it in the description. But I know it was somebody connected to all these people who just coincidentally went to visit him the night before. Went to visit Giuliani, that is. Who himself, as a function of his office, had an additional office in the World Trade Center 7, and I went into all of that and what was going on there in the recording on COVID-19, in the first part anyway. And here it is. The Patriot Act was edited hours before it was presented for a vote to ensure ICTS and other Israeli-connected firms would be immune from prosecution for the events of 9/11. Well, again, they were just hiding the information. They were making sure that nothing was allowed to come out in discovery. Which, I have to say, from a legal perspective, is just the smart way to do it. That's how you would do it. You would have all of your agents in place to make sure that you were in control of the flow of information in the aftermath. Because they had already done so much programming and mind control on the American population and the world population in general that the actual events of that day were easily passed off as real in the moment that it was transpiring. So they had to be concerned with the cover-up and the aftermath of it, and that's how you protect information. That's where information can really come out, is in a legal proceeding. So they had their eyes on the ball there as far as being ready for all of that. And what a huge thing to craft all of this so the organizations that were involved in the security apparatus were all immune from being sued. And as a result, prosecution for any involvement they had in security lapses. We still to this day don't have any of that information. So, I said at the beginning that we were going to be getting into pattern recognition, and this brings us to Ben Crump. Benjamin Crump represents clients in some of the most important and contentious cases of our time, taking a place in legal history in pursuit of justice. His role in the Trayvon Martin, Martin Lee Anderson boot camp, Janny Liggins, and Robbie Tolan cases shows a legacy built around the idea that the Constitution applies to everyone at every level of society. So, as everyone I'm sure is aware, Ben Crump is the attorney who has represented all of the families of these alleged racially motivated hate crimes that have taken place in the past few years. Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and Trayvon Martin. Ben Crump was the attorney for the families in all of these cases. So I hope you see the pattern recognition here, that it just so happens that Kenneth Feinberg is the lawyer who represents the arbitration in all of these events that are taking place in the media, allegedly. And now we have, as coincidence would have it, the very same attorney being involved in all of these racially motivated alleged hate crimes that are being promoted by the media also. Do you see the pattern there? This is odd. This is very strange that the same lawyer would be representing, would be involved in this way. Surely, along the way, there would be a family that would say, yeah, hey, I know you have experience in these matters, but I'm going to go with this guy who I know better, or I'm going to go with this guy who just talked me into it in a different way than you did, and I like him better. Do you see what I'm saying? And this really takes on a different character when you look into the Trayvon Martin case, and it has just come out recently that there was flagrant judicial fraud in this case where Trayvon Martin's alleged girlfriend was swapped before the trial. They literally put a different person than his girlfriend on the stand, and she claimed to be his girlfriend. Now, I have to stress this to you guys. This is legal incompetence on a scale that is simply impossible. Okay? You have to understand that the district attorney in this case, the prosecutor, she represented an entire office of people whose entire job, especially on a high-profile case like this, is to research the case from every angle. There is simply no way that a prosecutor's office would miss this. Accordingly, we have to question, was this some sort of kangaroo court, some staged media production that was passed off as a court proceeding that really wasn't? Because if you remember, it was this fake witness's testimony that kicked off all of the media celebrities, Colin Kaepernick, LeBron James. They fanned the flames of all the protests that started around those times with, or as it related to, the Trayvon Martin case. It was all kicked off by this, which we now know was fraudulent. And here you have an article that came out after the fact. Lawyer Zimmerman prosecutor withheld evidence. A court employee who retrieved photos and deleted text messages from Trayvon Martin's cell phone has been placed on administrative leave after an attorney testified that prosecutors didn't properly turn over the evidence to the defense. Former prosecutor Wesley White said he was ethically obligated to reveal that Fourth Judicial Circuit information. Technology director Ben Crudebeau retrieved the data that wasn't turned over. So again, I have to stress from a legal perspective that it is highly unlikely that a prosecutor in a high-profile media case like the Trayvon Martin case, even though the legal profession is filled with corruption, that's not the time to hide evidence from the defense because you're under such intense scrutiny that it will always come out. And that's what happened here as far as the hiding of evidence that was recovered by the IT department of the prosecutor's office. And then there's all kinds of additional scrutiny that was levied against Angela Corey, who was the prosecutor in the Zimmerman case, and you get to see a picture start to form where it becomes evident that the prosecutor's office, due to this unimaginable incompetence, was most likely in on the agenda to acquit George Zimmerman so that it could pop off the riots and protests that would later come. Because you have to remember that the George Zimmerman acquittal is what set off Colin Kaepernick's protest, Michael Brown, Ferguson, Missouri, Baltimore. That whole thing was spurred into action by, or it was the excuse for them to organize the protests around the acquittal of George Zimmerman, which represented another injustice, you know, a white guy killing a young black man. And we see the same thing now, or we'll see the same thing now with the George Floyd case, where I can almost guarantee that those police officers will be found not guilty of murder. And then that'll set off a whole nother round of stuff in the United States. And they have their organizations in place. I don't need to tell you that they stage all these protests, and they will use that as the pretext to just do what they always do in these situations. But it's important to point out here that this George Zimmerman acquittal was the result of a completely fabricated witness. I mean, they put a fake witness on the stand, and it was the prosecutor who put her on the stand, if you can believe that. And I watched some video from CNN or something, and one of their legal quote-unquote experts said, yeah, you know, in the law, you want to get ahead of things. So that's probably why they did that. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, you want to get ahead of things, but that's a little extreme. I think you just wait for the defense to call the fake witness and use that to your advantage if you're the prosecutor. So the whole thing was just crazy. And you have to wonder if it was scripted from the beginning to produce that outcome, which would mean that everyone was involved on some level, including the Martins. And there is evidence to support that, right? There's images out there of Trayvon Martin's father that indicate that he's a part of the club in some way, shape, or form. And we saw the same thing in the George Floyd incident where his quote-unquote twin, Steven Jackson, had a dad who was also showing his Masonic affiliations. And it's interesting that they use the twin narrative between George Floyd and Steven Jackson because Donald Trump is a Gemini. It's the sign of the twins, right? And that connects to his being put into office on 11/9, 9/11, the Twin Towers, which goes right back to everything we've been discussing here. And incidentally, the movie Gemini Man came out in the fall of 2009. And of course, Donald Trump is a Gemini as well. In addition to all that symbolism, he's actually a sign in astrology terms of Gemini. So Gemini Man here, referring to all of this that's taking place and the twins, I would guess that if you went back and watched this movie, I haven't yet, there's probably subliminal subconscious stuff in there along the lines of what I'm hinting at here. So I'll probably watch this at some point and see if that's true, but feel free to take that and run with it. Because I brought this up further, noting that David Benoit wrote, or at least co-wrote, Gemini Man, and he is one of the co-creators of the Game of Thrones HBO series. And check this out. David Benoit, which isn't his last name, he changed his name, is the son of Stephen Friedman, who was an executive with Goldman Sachs, an advisor to President George W. Bush, and a chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So that's a nice little tie-in there to Game of Thrones, too. Again, winter is coming, and I went into all that serious AB subconscious subliminal programming in Game of Thrones and how that ties into where the cycles of Sirius A and B are, the apophis, apoapsis, and the 50-year cycle, So that ties into that. And then you have Gemini Man tying into Trump and his role in everything that's been going on with COVID-19 and the George Floyd protests and just the destabilization of America. Winter is coming, right? And that just all ties into what I started the recording talking about with the pattern recognition between Ken Feinberg and Benjamin Crump. Here we have another coincidence where the attorney representing the families of all these alleged racially profiled shootings is the same attorney in every case, Benjamin Crump, just as it is Kenneth Feinberg almost every time there is some sort of arbitration or mediation or victim compensation fund in a hyped up event promoted by the media. Very interesting, right?